Chess Griffin, who is the maintainer, well, the programmer and maintainer of SBOPKG. How you doing, Chess?
Good, good. How you doing, Fosu?
It's good to talk to you again. You were on episode 19, I think, of season 2.
Right.
And I think that was probably when SBOPKG just came out originally, probably.
Yeah, it was pretty early on, I think. I remember looking back at that, and a lot has changed since then.
That's what I was going to say, yeah. So why don't you, can you think of some of the things that have changed? I know of two things that have changed since then.
Sure.
But, well, first I should preface this, I guess, with the 0.32 release. It just came out, like 2 weeks ago, maybe?
Yeah, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, yeah. Early March, I think. Things have definitely changed. I mean, from a development standpoint, the biggest thing is I've now got two people helping me out, Mauro and Slack Magic, and they're two Slackware users, and they were sort of early, both of them were early contributors with patches and stuff, and they've been, I mean, invaluable. SBO package, certainly, I mean, I'll be the first to admit that it would not be where it is today without their help, I'm sure. Since we, I guess, talked last, I mean, gosh, you know, there's been so many changes, but the biggest things, I guess, is I don't even remember back then if we had the ability to install packages, so that was added. That was a fairly trivial addition. But we also, of course, incorporated support for Slackware 64 and SLAMD 64, which was the unofficial 64-bit port, and we added support for Q files. We had sort of very early support for this a long time ago, and it never really developed, and now I think it's developed a lot more. But those are basically text files that someone can manually create and just list the order of packages to be built, or packages and all that are all the things that depend on. So it's basically a way for SBO package to track dependencies, but it's still, I mean, it's up to the user to create that, which is what kind of the Slackware package management system is all about anyway.
And that's the best, I think that's the best thing about SBO package, because it feels like a package manager, but it doesn't have that excess baggage of the whole sort of like, we're going to database all of your things and try to update all your dependencies before you and all that other stuff that comes along with the package managers, which are very cool, like, you know, apt-get and yum and all that other stuff. But if you like Slackware, then probably one of the things you like about it is that it doesn't do that stuff. So it's nice that SBO package does do that.
Yeah, exactly. And we really try to keep, probably the number one focus is to keep SBO package sort of consistent with Slackware. We're not trying to add things on like Slapget does, stuff
right,
like that.
Yeah.
And ultimately, when you come down to it, SBO package really does three things. It uses rsync to pull down the Slack build repo, and then it runs the Slack build script that the user selects. Then it optionally calls install package, which is part of the native package tools to install it.
Yeah.
And that's all it does. And, you know, people have asked sometimes, they're like, well, can't you, you know, figure out some way to have it automatically filled, figure out the dependency, you know, grepping the README file or running LDD or something, and that's just not something that we plan to do at all. I mean, that will be kind of a hack, and it won't really work, and there'll be issues with it, and it just doesn't kind of fit in with the whole philosophy of Slackware package management.
Well, one of the many things I like about SBO package is that is that how you're saying it now, SBO package? Because I think when we first spoke, you were like, I don't know how to say it yet. So it's SBO package.
And SBO package really doesn't flow off the tongue very easily.
It's better than SBO PKG. That's how I say it. I've been saying it.
I just figure it's sort of, we have Slack package, install package. So that's kind of where it comes from.
Okay. All right. So SBO package. One of the things I really like about it is that even though it is, you know, like you said, it really simplistically, it's just such it does nothing practically. It rsyncs, it builds, and then it'll call install package and install it for you if you want it to. But it's such a life-changing thing because you're like, oh, it makes things so much easier because it's all like consolidated in one little interface. But it somehow does not discourage the user from being very, very actively involved in what is going into their system. You know, you have the README file, you have easy access to that, you've got the Slack build script itself that you can look at and change all from within that little interface. So, I mean, it might make it easier, but it doesn't even go so far as violating the idea that you should know sort of like what you're doing, you know, like you should actually be involved in those decisions.
Yeah, and that's, that's kind of the idea that, you know, one thing that kind of, I always try to clarify sometimes I'm talking to folks on IRC or users that ask questions. I see this all the time. People say, well, you can find, you know, Audacity. You can find the Audacity package in SBO package or something like that.
Right.
I say, well, no, that's not the right way to look at it. You know, Audacity is maintained at slackbuilds.org.
Yeah.
And SBO package is, it's just a front end.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
That's all that it is. It's nothing more than that. SBO package doesn't have any repos of its own. It's just a utility to interface with slackbuilds.org. Sometimes that, you know, I realize it kind of gets to be sort of a gray area when you're using it, but in my mind, there's a very clear distinction that if there's a problem with SBO package, it's not slackbuilds.org's fault.
Right, right.
It's some bug that I introduced, most likely.
Yeah. One of the other things, well, the Q files, first of all, because you did mention that as one of the big changes, those really are great. Those are, that, because I maintain at least two computers with Slackware on them, and they're basically identical. I mean, one is kind of like my testing platform for a lot of the multimedia stuff that I'm interested in, and then one is the actual computer that I really, really, in real life use, you know, that I've got finely tuned for video editing and podcast production, and, you know, all the stuff I do. But it's really nice because the Q file, you can just pass it back and forth between those computers, and you've got a whole list of things that you can install by a Q file. It's really, really nice.
Yeah, I think they've worked out pretty well, and what's great to see, which I was hoping to see, is that some folks like your site, you know, the list that you're maintaining, and, you know, even Mauro, one of my co-developers, he's got this huge Git repository of SBO package Q files for the entire slackbuilds.org repo. Somebody else just recently posted a similar thing on the Linux questions forum, and that was my hope, is that people would create and share these Q files, because, you know, again, on the one hand, I don't want to force SBO package to do something that it's not really supposed to do, or, you know, I don't want to take away the user's intervention at all.
Right.
But at the same time, if you know you need DNC package, I mean, you know, you're going to install those three in that order. Why not a little document, a little text file that just lists those three? It just saves a little bit of time rather than having to manually create that list every single time. So it's really just like, I view it as saving a list of you know, packages that you're going to install in the right order.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it also has features, the Q files, of being able to recursively pull in other Q files. So you can have one Q file of all your multimedia apps, one of something else, and then you can pull them all together in a XFCE type of Q file or whatever. So it's kind of like an include. You can include other Q files.
Oh, see, I didn't know that. I was not aware of that. That's cool.
And you can set build options for files, I mean, for packages.
Right.
You know, if a package has got a build option, you can put that in the Q file by just putting a little pipe character. There's a document on the SBO package website that explains how to do all this.
Oh, okay. I've not looked into any of that at all. So I will. I've always been just changing the Slack build script, you know, I'll like comment out some of the ifs and thens that kind of like try to determine what's going to be built, and I'll just like hard code it, you know, and
right,
just change it.
Right.
So I didn't know I could do that in the Q file.
Yeah, if the Slack build script supports passing options to it, then of course it has to, you know, that's sort of has to have that.
Okay.
But a lot of the Slack build scripts at slackbuilds.org has that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, OpenBox, which is one of the ones I maintain, somebody else actually contributed in addition to that Slack build, which lets you optionally pass an argument to build a, you know, if you're going to use, you know, KDE and KDM, you can optionally build an OpenBox session file such that it will appear in KDM.
Cool.
Because by default it doesn't do that. But all you need to do is pass a certain variable along with run the build script, and it will do that for you. And a lot of them have that. So SBO package just passes those things along to the Slack build.
Cool. The other thing about SBO PKG that I've noticed in the... I think this was probably about two... Well, what release number? I mean, well, this is 0.32, but like what iteration is this? It seems to me like it's like the... I don't know.
You mean like what number release? Like how many releases have there been?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because I was just looking at this, and I was looking at the downloads page of the Google Code site where SBO packages SVN repository is, and there's a total of far as I can tell, 42 releases.
Oh, okay.
Some of them were RCs, you know, release games.
Yeah, okay.
But there's probably been about, you know, 30 or 35 individual releases.
Oh, because you released technically like almost every month.
We did for a while. It slowed down. I mean, just because it's gotten fairly stable and mostly feature complete, I think, for the most part. So, but yeah, we were releasing a lot, you know, for a while. And, you know, we're still planning to kind of add a few little things and just, of course, fix bugs.
Yeah, okay, well, that's cool. Well, anyway, what I was going to say, I mean, this was probably, I don't know how to gauge it because I can't remember, but it was a while ago, where I remember the very, very early ones, you had to really go into the config file and actually set things up for it, because I don't think it was storing everything, like, right now it stores pretty much everything that's important in /var, pretty much, right?
Right, right.
But originally you had it stored in the home folder and stuff like that, I think.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep,
it, right. Nowadays it's like you download it, you install it, and it's pretty much ready to go. Like if you download the package and do an install package with it, it's pretty much ready. You fire it up and it creates, you know, it asks you if it's okay to create some folders. You say yes, 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 and then you're up and running. You rsync and you're going.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And part of that change moving from home to var was last August when we released version 0.30.0. That was a major, major release in a lot of ways. There was a huge code rewrite. I mean, we rewrote probably 80% of it.
Wow.
And did a lot of things, added some security features. But one of those things was to, originally SDO package, and this was just a design mistake, I think, initially on my part, but I was trying to make it such that it could be run by the user rather than by root. So I had the repos saved in home, and of course you could change that in the config file. And, you know, the idea originally was the normal regular user could run it and then do anything and make changes, whatever, sync, you know, rsync and whatever. And then when it came time to actually build and install, it would prompt the root password. But there were some security issues with that, and, you know, we talked about it a lot, and we thought, well, you know, all the other package tools install in USR SBIN, and it has to be run as root. Let's just make SDO packages like the others, require you to run as root, and then it made sense to move the repo away from home and put it into, I think it's var lib SDO packages, mm-hmm. where it is,
yeah.
And there's a cache directory that saved in var. And again, of course, people can change all that if they want. If they want to move it back to home, they can. In terms of sensible defaults, we felt like that was a much better initial setup and a lot more kind of in keeping with what it does.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, when you're talking about it now, it seems so obvious, but I remember when you first made that change, I thought, wow, that seems so so drastic. I have to be root to run this? You know, it felt weird to be root and playing around so much. But, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes people have asked, well, can you make it support fake root or something, or one of these other ways of building packages, like in a chroot or something, and, you know, yeah, that could probably be added, but that's just not an emphasis right now. You know, SVO package is really intended to be very much like the other Slackware packages, and those, again, are intended to be run as root. Furthermore, the Slack build scripts at slackbuilds.org, there's actually an FAQ about this. They are also created, intended to be run as root. So,
right, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
You know, we're just trying to kind of fit in and not rock the boat in that area too much.
Yeah, well, I mean, I certainly don't know nearly enough about security to even know, you know, whether it's better to run it as root or whether it's better to run it as user and then be root just to install or whatever.
Yeah,
but
yeah, and I'm certainly no security expert by any means, but, you know, we tried to build it, you know, some things like we didn't do this originally, but we now pull in the SBO, the Slack builds GPG key and we verify the all of the scripts against the signed tarball, because on the slackbuilds.org website, you know, in the FTP tree, there's the directory for each package, but then there's also a tarball of the contents of that directory, and it's GPG signed. So we pull in the GPG key and check the signatures, and actually we also extract that tarball on top of the directory every single time the package is built.
Okay.
So to prevent someone messing around with the repo and then the root user running a script through SDO package,
yeah.
not,
always there. My memory, I always remember that being there, but I guess not, huh? That was a new thing.
Yeah, it was added. I think it was added a while ago. I seem to recall it was part of that. I think it was actually before that big cleanup. But yeah, so we try to check the MD5 some and the GPG signatures and things like that to provide some level of security, although, again, I make no promises that it's,
Right.
I'm not a diehard security expert, so, but we try to do what we can.
Yeah, no, I mean, it feels secure to me, which isn't saying much, but I certainly feel good using it. So, yeah, well, that's cool. So, so SBOPK package is, yeah, I mean, it's working really well. I think it's a great little application, and if any of the listeners haven't used it, I encourage them to try it out. So it's sbopackage.org, correct?
Yep. Cool. And I definitely encourage folks, if they try it out and if they find bugs or problems, to report them at the, again, at the Google code. There's a thing they call the issue tracker. It's like a bugzilla. But we really keep on top of that, and people have used it a lot. And so we monitor the bugs, and we follow up and fix them. And right now, we don't have any outstanding bugs, you know, knock on wood. So, but we really want that, those kinds of reports. They really need help. You know, sometimes people post on Linux Questions or in IRC, and we might see it, or we might not, but definitely feel free to send feedback and feature requests and put reports or something. You know, we do listen to that very, very carefully.
Cool, okay. Just really briefly, I don't think there's really much to say about it as far as I know, but, I mean, so how's MashPotter going, and is that pretty much a done deal, or like, what's up with MashPotter? I'm using it as my podcatcher now, so I'm just kind of curious as to, like, if you've been doing anything with that or not.
Well, not a lot. I've had some thoughts about it, and I've had a lot of people contact me about it, actually. I had one person say they were considering packaging it for, I think it was for Debian, I don't remember, but I don't think that has happened, but it is improving the packages, I don't think. I still use it. I mean, I use it every single day. I've been running from a cron job.
Oh, cool.
And you know, I give big props to Link from the Linux Link Tech Show.
Yep.
He was, as everybody knows, he created MashPotter, which was the inspiration for MashPotter. I think it's working really well. There's a couple little things I've thought about, a couple little features, but nothing too crazy. And you know, people are downloading it. And I had one bug report last fall that I fixed.
See, that's a great rate for bug reports, isn't it? last year I had a bug report.
Right. You know, and if nothing else, probably means not enough people are using it, because I'm sure there's a lot of bugs in it. But it works great for me. I think it has problems sometimes with some of the more goofy out there that have like a bunch of redirects and all this kind of nonsense.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Video stuff. I mean, occasionally, like, there, I've had to, previously, I mean, I had to build in some fixes for, like, downloading videos from CNN or something, and, or MSNBC maybe, and they were breaking because their feed was stupid and it didn't work, but, it wasn't really a MashPotter problem, it was a feed problem, but, so I was trying to, you know, sometimes I have to work around those kind of things, but, I mean, I have 20 to 25 feeds in there at any given time, whether they're podcasts or audiobooks or whatever, and I never have any problems.
That's cool. Yeah, it's interesting to think about all the different issues that can arise, because, see, I would have never even imagined anyone using MashPotter for, like, CNN videos. That's just so outside of anything I would ever use it for.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's just like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. And I've done that. I've downloaded a few video feeds. Yeah, I've put in a few video feeds from time to time just to see if it works. And it seems to work fine, but you're right. That's not what I primarily use any kind of podcatcher for. I don't watch a lot of online videos.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah, I don't know.
It's all audio stuff.
Yeah. What Slack builds do you maintain? You said that you've got OpenBox on your plate. You got Audacity, I know it.
Yeah, I'm so bad about updating my Slack builds. I think I've got 17 or 18 Slack builds right now.
Ooh, wow.
You know, a good number of them are out of date, and I need to get off my rear end and fix that.
Yeah.
It's just these last 8 or 9 months been really insane for me, work-wise and family-wise.
Yeah.
Two young kids, and now they're all into...
Oh, I didn't know you had two kids. I thought you had one kid.
Yeah.
I didn't. Okay.
I've got two boys.
Oh, okay.
There's always something. thing every night.
Oh, my gosh,
just don't have time. I probably should pass off maintainership of some of those to people who use it a lot.
I'll take Audacity from you anytime. You just let me know. That's one that I'm always using. So.
Well, feel free.
I mean, it's a Slack build. Anyone really can. I mean, especially as long as they got the permission of the maintainer, they can submit an update. And the Audacity build is, that script is great. I love it. But the one thing I typically do is go in and tweak the version number.
Right.
Although, to be fair, I usually stay with one version of Audacity for a very long time. Because once I find one that works really, really well, I don't want to be their beta tester on my podcasts.
I can certainly understand that. And I think that Audacity, certainly, they bump their version numbers. And, you know, it's not that often. And it's fairly, I've never had an issue with Audacity, one version to another. So, bumping that up to the newest version, probably, and changing the download, the download URL or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And you buy something. That should probably be all that's needed.
Yeah, it's an easy, quick change, and I do that sometimes. Again, I have my two machines going, so I've got my stable one where I do actually just use the Slack build that you've got up there, and sort of my test machine. I've got two versions or three versions ahead of what you've got on the Slack build.
Okay.
So.
Okay. I think the one in the repo is 1.3.7.
No, 8. It's 8 in the repo.
Is it 8?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
the longest thing. Well, yeah, I mean.
I think is the current version 1.4?
No, I think it's, strangely enough, 1.3.11.
1.3.11. So I've got a few others, a couple of games,
Oh, that's right. You do have some games, like Alien Arena or something like that, something weird like that.
Not that, but I've got Next UVs or something.
Oh, yeah, Next, that's the one, yeah.
Open Arena.
Yeah, I saw that, and I was like, I didn't know chess played games.
I don't anymore.
I'm not a game player, so I've never installed any of that stuff. I wouldn't know what to do once it launched.
Yeah, I've been really slack.
so to speak. Yeah. That's a good thing about using a distribution called Slackware, I guess. No one can blame you if you slack off a little bit.
And the beauty about Slack build scripts and slackbuild.org is that you don't have to rely on a maintainer. So that's what's so nice about scripts. And that's why it's kind of like the BSD stuff, which is, of course, where SDO Package got its inspiration from. BSD ports. Because if the maintainer doesn't update it, it's not like it's a binary package like you have in Debian or something that you could pull down the Debian source and you could probably updated manually, but that's a lot of work. But with the Slack build script, it's easy, it's trivial. And sometimes updating the number may not be enough, but I'd say probably 8 out of 10 times that's all that's needed.
Oh yeah, I think it is. I mean, like you say, 8 out of 10 times, I think that's about it. Because I've changed quite a few of them on this test machine, and it just doesn't seem to be much of an issue, really.
Yeah, it's just easy. And so, I don't understand it when people say that Slackware package management is hard or incomplete or something. I mean, it's just not that complicated. And there's a lot of beauty in the freedom that it gives you to hack the scripts and do whatever you want and build your own repo. An SBO package does support custom repos.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot to mention that. Yeah. You can you can construct your own repository of your own Slack builds.
Right, and there are people that do that, and I've done that. I've used it for testing purposes, and it's worked really well, and it's not that hard to do. I just changed the tag in the Slack build scripts and changed the tag in the SDO, but you wouldn't even need to do that. I mean, you could just copy it to another directory, change the configuration file to point to the new directory, and, there you go. You got, that you can play around with, but the Slack build scripts, they're really fantastic.
I obviously love it a lot, so I use it all the time. I much prefer it. I can't say enough on how I just kind of prefer it to the other package management systems, and nothing against them. And I know for a lot of people, the RPMs and the Debian, the .debs and stuff really, really work really, really well. But I guess there's another style of computing where you don't actually want that much yeah, I guess that many layers of abstraction away from what's going on. So.
Right, right. Yeah, and I've used all those systems too, and you know, I mean, they're fine, and I've never really had any major issues with the other package systems. It's just I don't feel like I'm in as much control.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Slack build scripts, Slack build packages. But I mean, I've used Debian and Fedora, and I've used Fedora and CentOS at work, so I mean, they look fine. I mean, I got no problems with it, but I just don't feel like I really know what packages are made of.
Right, yeah.
How they calculate dependency.
Yeah. So describe your Linux, setup these days. Like, what desktop are you using and stuff like that? Or your computer setup, I mean, whatever right. You're using.
Well, I have a home web server that's running OpenBSD.
Oh, okay.
And that has, I have changed that operating system from time to time, but I always come back to OpenBSD for it because, you know, I like OpenBSD a lot and I just want to, you know, stay up on it. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So do they use the port system on that as well then?
They do. They actually rely a lot on packages, on binary packages. They do have a port system, but their emphasis is on packages. They build their entire port tree into packages for each release. And, you know, it seems to work pretty well. Again, you know, the downside is you don't really know what's being pulled in and all that. But the flip side is I think it's not as bad on the BSDs that have packages because you still do have the port tree with the make files in there. And, you know, the BSD make files are very similar to Slack build scripts because you can go in and modify it and do whatever you want. You know, enable options or disable options very easily and then just rebuild the package.
Okay.
Which is nice. So, and I, as far as a web server, I really like OpenBSD because it includes, you know, Apache, a special rooted Apache, with all kinds of security patches and whatnot.
Right. I mean, they're super, super famous for their whole security mindset and stuff. Yeah.
But then my main desktop still runs Slackware 64. I haven't yet moved to current. I'm still on 13.
Yeah, so am I.
I do have current. For SBO package stuff, I do always maintain, you know, both 32 and 64-bit virtual machines and virtual box.
Oh, okay.
So I can test, you know, SBO package on my own system. Yeah, I eat my own dog food, so I use it in my own system all the time.
Yeah.
So that I can also test it on current in the virtual machines. And my laptop, I have a ThinkPad that dual boots between Slackware, and I have OpenBSD on that as well.
Oh, cool.
And
OpenBSD on a laptop, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
How's it, what's the hardware support and stuff like?
It's really good. I mean,
especially on a Lenovo, I mean, it's got all Intel insides and stuff, huh?
Yeah, and I've always had ThinkPads, and, you know, I know the OpenBSD developers use ThinkPads all the time.
Oh, okay.
I mean, this is a newer version. It's the X200S. So the things that don't work on it, wireless works fine, and X works, but it doesn't have acceleration because the GM45, which is the Intel X4500, you know, HD, which is the Intel, which is the successor to the X3100. Mobile chipset.
Yep.
They don't have 3D support for that yet in OpenBSD.
Okay.
So, but I mean, 2D works fine.
In sure.
Regular desktop.
Yeah.
Suspend doesn't work. So, but I don't really suspend it, which is not a problem for me. But everything else seems to work fine. Sound and the brightness controls and, USB and all that other stuff obviously works fine.
Yeah, Lenovo's, I am definitely impressed with. I've got a friend with one, and then I got myself one. And yeah, it's just, they're really nice computers. They feel solid. They feel, you know, well made. Got lots of features, and at least my little Lenovo, everything works with Slackware. It's just like out of the box, just like even the little extra keys, you know, for like brightness controls and muting and, I wouldn't call them multimedia keys, but they're like those extra kinds of keys. Those all
right.
Work. And,
yeah,
everything
brightness
works. So.
The muting and, those buttons.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
Yeah, I really like ThinkPads, and, they're really cool. One thing I forgot to mention that I probably should mention is the web server I have runs on an Atom.
Oh, okay.
nice. Several years ago, I had a home server that was, big, huge, old. It was like a 10-year-old Dell.
Yeah.
Loud beast. And, it's great to have low power quiet machine.
Oh man. Yeah. No kidding. Yeah. Actually, Robbie Workman was in IRC the other month now, but he got one of those little, I think they're Shiva plugs, I think is what they're called.
Yeah,
and they're the ARM processors.
Yep.
And he had Slack ARM, the ARM port of Slack on there. And yeah, it's like you hear about that and you're just like, oh man, I should go get one of those and just do that because it's so easy. It's $100. You plug it into your wall and you're ready to go. It's really cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That Shiva plug is pretty cool. I also like the Fit PC.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. You and I were, actually, I think we emailed about that for a little while.
Yeah. And they have a new version, which the only bad thing about the new version is it's got the GMA 500, which is that Intel, that brand new Intel chip that's like not supported in Linux or something at all. It relies on some kind of third-party binary driver or something. I don't know.
Oh, weird.
I don't have any machines with it, so I haven't looked into it, but I saw some posts somewhere about it.
Well, that's very strange.
But that little Fit PC, I think, I may look for one of the last generation ones, which didn't have that same chipset, is really Linux friendly. But yeah, those little Shiva plugs and those little boxes are really cool.
Yeah, they are. They're really neat. There was a really good talk by Eben Moglen about like personal servers and stuff, and he was raving about the idea of a server that can basically fit in your pocket, and you can take it and you can just go, and you almost, in a way, have your own cloud that you can also grab and take with you if you ever need to.
Right.
It's a pretty cool little development, I think, in computing.
Yeah, it is. And, it's funny, this whole cloud stuff, I'm not really all that into it, but what I have gotten kind of addicted to, unfortunately, is Dropbox.
Mm-hmm.
It is really handy to have that service. I have a little, GPG file that I can encrypt. Unencrypted on there. But I don't like the proprietariness of Dropbox.
Right, yeah, there's that, there's that proprietary side to it.
I can't run it on OpenBSD. I can log into the web interface, but I can't run the little daemon thing.
That's right, okay.
That KDE and GNOME, I think, we're going to come together and try to build a free Dropbox alternative.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be Git-based.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, and in fact, I think it's going to be hosted on Gitorious.
That would be cool, because I know Dropbox uses Amazon's S3 service as its backend, I think.
Yeah.
But that would be awesome, and if it was truly free, if they had a free client that could run on any operating system, that would be awesome.
It would be great. It would be fantastic, yeah. I think that would be really, really neat, and I hope that does happen. Because, yeah, I'm like you, I mean, I don't use Dropbox anymore. I did use it for a while at work because it really helped me, be able to take all my stuff around with me. But right now, I'm just basically using Git as it's not really a cloud, obviously. It's actually for Slacker Media. I just push my changes up from work and I come home and I pull them back down at home and keep working on it. So, it's nice.
Yeah, that is nice. And that's probably what I should ultimately do, because then I could do something like that with my encrypted files.
Because
I think Git will work with binary or encrypted files, I believe.
I'm pretty sure, yeah. I mean, as far as I know. Well, I do know that it will, yeah. Because at work, we actually do that, so.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. Plus. Yeah, because that would be nice. That would be really nice to have. That's a good way to do it. Because, the Dropbox is nice. I do get to pull it up at work, and I have to use Windows at work mostly. So, which is, that's why I use it. But I know they have some version that Git, clients for Windows, so I can do something like that at work as well.
Yeah, totally.
I use Subversion at home on my home server, but I don't pull that, off other than at home.
Do you use that for SBOPKG then?
Well, the Subversion for, I use Subversion for SBO package, but it's the Subversion is hosted at the Google.
Oh, that's right,
They use Subversion.
Right.
I've always used Subversion. I've never used Git, but I know Mara, my co-developers, he uses Git for all his stuff. He loves it. And I know you spoke highly of it. A lot of people, everybody seems to love Git. I just haven't gotten there yet.
I mean, I love it, but then I don't have anything to compare it to either, so... my praise should be taken with a grain of salt. But, everyone does seem to think pretty highly of it, so...
Yeah. I'm just so used to Subversion. version, but it's hard for me to...
Right, yeah. That. Yeah, and I do understand that Git is a little, you know, quite different, like some of the terminology and I guess even some of the concepts behind how it manages things.
Right, right.
So, yeah, it's definitely something to check out, look into. I mean, I was using it for myself just for personal stuff, and then I got this job where they're using it in real life with like 30 different people, you know, you pulling and pushing and committing, and it's so different on a large scale because you're just like so nervous when you're about to hit return on a commit or a push, you know, because you're just like, oh, I don't want to break anything, but I'm glad that I was at least using it on my own before having this experience with a real implementation of it. Okay, well, so I told a lot of people, you know, that you're going to be on the show and stuff, and I guess for listeners who don't know, Chess Griffin used to have a show called Linux Reality, who, at least right now, as of, March 2010, like, a lot of people sort of attribute, you know, as the reason that they came to Linux and that kind of thing. So people want to know, this was the one question that people seemed to want me to ask you, is there any chance of Linux Reality ever returning, even on an irregular basis? And that's a serious, that's an honest question. I didn't make that up. People actually asked me to.
If I had a dollar for every time somebody asked me, I'd be able to buy a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
No, I know, and I do get my email, and so I certainly do appreciate the interest, and, you know, it's pretty awesome that people still find it. I mean, I still get emails. I probably get 10 to 20 a month from people who say they just found it, and they're listening, they're going through it, and all this, and that's why I've continued to maintain the files. I actually just recently uploaded everything to the Internet Archive.
Oh, cool.
Because I was worried. I started thinking, well, gosh, if somebody, you know, likely liked this, like, what if something happened to me? And, you know,
yeah, really.
Take my hosting bill or something.
Yeah.
Whatever. But it's unlikely that, you know, I think it's unlikely that it will come back. I mean, I feel like it was a really good run. I really enjoyed it. It ended at a good spot. You know, it kind of covered everything I wanted to cover. It had a natural lifespan, I think. Just on top of that, my time, I just don't have the time anymore.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people don't realize how, like, just really time-consuming, especially if you want to be, like, a good podcaster, like, someone who actually makes good stuff and also responds to all the questions that you get, which is just kind of like a side benefit of being a podcaster. People actually start, like, asking you questions on random stuff, but and at the same time it does take time, and so you have to like make a call. Are you gonna like be a professional podcaster, or are you gonna do the other stuff that people expect you to do in real life as well? So
you know, as SBO package has kind of, you know, ramped up, and it's, you know, that tool's become pretty popular.
Yeah. Oh no, I mean, I always see people talking about it in Slackware on Freenode, so
Yeah, so I feel, you know, some responsibility there to keep it up, and, you know, I'm glad I've got my two co-maintainers to help. But, you know, it's just, it's been mostly a time issue than anything else, but you're right. I mean, I can't imagine all the amount of time you spend with everything that you do. I mean, you know, how many podcasts you're involved with. It's pretty impressive. And there's no way, you know, even prepared time last year, I was kind of semi-appearing on the Linux Link Tech Show, and I had to kind of take a little step back from that and just kind of take an unofficial leave of absence or something, because I just, you know, I can't commit to being on for 2 hours on a Wednesday night. Soccer practice and stuff. So I just try to do what I can. Instead, I like to listen to all you guys and all your podcasters.
Thank you. Me personally, I'll take SBO package over Linux Reality. That's me personally. I know a lot of other people probably feel like I'm crazy because they don't use Slackware, but, you know, yeah, I think that's a good trade. And I know your kids and your wife probably think it's a good trade. As well, you know, they get you instead of your show, so. But yeah, it is pretty neat how many people still do look at Linux Reality as such a resource, and I mean it's been a while since it went off, but it's
2 years almost exactly.
Really, yeah. a lot of that stuff is still very applicable, and I mean, I literally still refer people to it when I get like random questions. A lot of times I'll be like, oh, well, you need to listen to this episode because it's covered really well. Of course, most of those episodes are the two that I did, but anyway. No, I mean, like the file system overview and stuff like that that you did. So.
Yeah, your episodes were among the highlights. That stuff was great.
Yeah, thanks.
But it was fun, and it was very flattering that people still think highly of it, and I really do appreciate the kind emails that people send, and it means a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of people still think of it and look for it and listen to it. I mean, and I'm going to keep it going. I'll keep the site up forever as long as people are interested.
Yeah.
Moving the files to the Internet Archive, I think is a good thing. It helps from a bandwidth standpoint. I had to do a lot of work to change all my links and everything to change the Internet Archive.
Man. Yeah. You also, I mean, you did kind of a cool thing where you had people would donate to a project, and then in return you would send them like a disc of the episodes and stuff. So
yep.
I think there's a bit of a proliferation of the actual content to where, if the internet goes down tomorrow, we can all at least write each other letters and say, hey, can you send me a copy of that disc?
Right. Yeah. It's stuff out there, so. And at some point, I'll probably just put that DVD on the Internet Archive, too, and just not worry about it anymore. I mean,
we'll
download the DVD if they want, with everything on it.
Yeah, good idea. All right. Well, I don't know. I mean, do you have anything else to report, I guess?
No, I guess, the only other thing, I guess, I would say, going back to SBO packages, just to kind of reiterate that, we definitely want people's feedback. If they've got feature requests or bug reports, please let us know. And if there's anything that you wish it did, that it doesn't do, or whatever, let us know, because we are very open to ideas and all of that. So,
where can we find out information on the Dee Somero's Git, I guess, repository of Hue files?
Yeah, it's Morrow.
Okay.
He's one of my co-developers.
Okay.
Go to sbopackage.org. And one of the tabs along the top is Hue files. And if you click that, there's some stuff there that describes how the Hue files work, and that's where it talks about the recursive Hue files and all of that. But in the opening paragraph on that page, there's a link to Morrow's Git repository of SBO package Hue files.
Very cool.
That's probably the easiest way to find it.
All right, cool. I mean, I saw his email to the Slack build group, I think it was.
Right. Yep.
I guess I don't go to sbopkg.org very much. I just, I grab the, I just wget the package and install it, and that's it. So I have to start hanging around your website a little bit more.
Well, it doesn't get updated that much, but, that was a more recent addition. But his repo, and it is hosted at that same site.
Gitorious?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and it's got, as I said, he's got basically a Hue file, Hue files for the entire slackbuilds.org repo.
Wow.
And it makes it really easy. So if a particular package has a couple of dependencies, he's probably got a Hue file for the dependencies in there. So
that's really cool.
You just
run
a SBO package with the Hue file name instead of the package name, and it just loads the packages in from the Hue file, and then it goes off.
That's really neat. Oh, which reminds me, actually, there is the command line option for SBO package as well that I always forget to mention. That's really slick too. Like if you know exactly what you need to install, or if you have like a Hue file like that, you can launch that stuff with just a command.
Right. Yeah. And that's actually how I primarily use SBO packages from the command line, and it really works well. It's almost on feature parity with the dialog interface version.
Yeah.
It's not possible. In a way, some of it's just the nature of a graphical interface. But,
yeah, you can't reverse the order of your queue or something.
Yeah, exactly. But most of the important features are there. The one thing that we're going to look to add is, I mentioned that the Hue files can build. You can have a Hue file and you can have build options. In the Hue file, and that's the way you do that is you have the Hue file is one package per line, going down. But if you want, next to the name on the same line, you put a pipe character, and then you put the build option. So
Sure, yeah.
Blackfield script. Well, we don't, there's no, if you're using STL package from the command line, there's no documented way to go ahead and pass those build options to the Slack build script. And there was a reason for that, because originally we were thinking, well, if you're going to pass those options, you're probably just going to run the Slack build script directly without worrying about the SPF package.
Right, yeah.
But then there have been instances where it would be helpful to have that feature, and you can do it by first echoing that build option into a file called options.build.
Okay.
You load a Q file, it parses it, and any build option it sticks into a file called options.build in that particular package's directory. So if you just manually create that file and stick those options in there, it'll work. Long story short, we're going to try to find a way to, you know, pass those build options from the command line.
Okay.
So that's our next big.
I mean, just do a flag and then have, like, in quotes, like, the build options or something like that, basically?
Well, that was my original proposal. Laura correctly pointed out that wouldn't work because people may build more than one package.
Oh, right.
Package, an SDO package, by putting them in quotes. So, SDO package wouldn't know what build option.
Which build option, yeah.
Which what package. If you have SDO package dash I to install and then quote and you list three packages and then a close quote and then you have another flag and then you have a quote with some build option, it doesn't know what goes with what. So, I think what we need to do is we need to be able to use the same pipe idea in the command line. So
okay.
We have STL package dash B quote app and then a pipe,
yeah.
Build option, and then a comma.
Yeah.
And the next package.
Okay. I get it. Something
like that.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Make it like a Q file almost.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Just in quotes.
So how did the incurses front end come about then? I mean, it sounds like you are using it mostly on the command line for you. So why did you ever think to do the incurses version of it?
Well, that's a good question. Because it originally started as just a command line script only, and then the incurses was added a little bit later. I mean, pretty early on. But I don't know. I just thought it would be nice to have, and it would be sort of similar. Package tool.
That's what I was thinking. That's actually why I asked the question. I was wondering if that was what it was.
Yeah, and it was very, you know, the look and some of the way the buttons are phrased and things like that. It tends to be very similar to package tool. It's not exactly the same, but it's the same style.
Yeah,
and,
no, it totally feels. It feels like it fits right in for sure.
Yeah, and so we just decided to build that in. You know, just because a lot of people are kind of used to having some kind of interface.
Yeah.
And besides, that way I could say it has a GUI.
right. It's not one of those line command applications. This
right.
is a professional one with a GUI.
Yeah, I've had people say, well, I wish it had a GUI, you know, a nice, cool GUI. And I said, it's got a GUI. It's not like interface. That's a GUI. Graphical interface.
Yep.
It's not GTK or, you know, QT, but it's a GUI.
Well, we're looking forward to the next one with 3D acceleration features built in. So,
Right.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks a lot, Chess, for talking to me and being on
yeah,
the show and everything.
No
appreciate
thanks
it.
Thanks for asking. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, cool. Well, I will talk to you later then. I'll see you around online.